Chapter 8. Pump Up Your Passion. Melinda and Bob, who are in their early 30s, have been together for 5 years. They think they have a good relationship with one major exception. They have so little sex that they both consider it pathetic. This wasn't the case when they first met. Then, sex was the most important thing in their relationship. The first weekend they spent together, they had sex so many times, neither thought they would be able to make it to work on Monday morning. They felt as though they were glued together by the sweat on their bodies. Currently, they are having sex once every 4 to 6 weeks. Most of the time these days, one or both of them feel as though it is just too much trouble. Melinda would rather watch movies on HBO than have sex. Bob feels the same way about hockey playoffs. They are still young. Melinda is very sexy and appealing. The women in Bob's office describe him as hot. What's going on with this couple? What can they do about it? When a couple first hooks up, so to speak, chances are that they are having sex all the time. Every day is not uncommon. Some couples have sex twice a day or more. As the relationship continues, the couple starts having sex with less frequency. The number of times the couple has sex per week or month may diminish even more and more. This is the norm, but what about when sex diminishes to once a month or less? And what about those healthy singles who rarely want sex? What's going on? Several studies indicate that a lack of desire is a woman's most common sexual problem. For a long time, it was assumed that few men had the same complaint. The woman was always the one with the headache. These days, however, modern society makes so many demands on all of us. Go here, go there, do this, do that. Couples with children are overwhelmingly busy and exhausted. Even single people say they don't always have the time. The end result is that even the most sexually inspired men and women are having days and nights when they are lacking in the desire department and feel as though they are not in the mood for sex. What we mean when we talk about desire. When I first started attending a community college, I was 24, which was a little older than the rest of the students. I had a class I really loved, American history. It was taught by one of the sexiest guys I had ever seen. He was smart, he was distinguished, and he had a voice that made me want to stop whatever I was doing to try to take him home. I couldn't wait to go to class and listen to him lecture. I still remember one lecture he gave about the Salem witch trials. Hey, you never know what's going to turn a woman on. Besides, I'm sure I wasn't the only woman in the class who was quivering on the end of her seat. There was another teacher at the school who wasn't much older than I was, and sometimes he and I would talk together. He knew that I was studying to be a sex therapist, which he found interesting because he liked to talk about sex. One day when I ran into him, he looked really upset and told me he was down in the dumps. "What's wrong?" I asked him. "Oh, I just don't feel the same way about sex that I used to," he told me. He began to describe in great detail how he was accustomed to experiencing high levels of sexual desire and passion, but lately nothing and no one had the power to turn him on. Finally, he said, "I mean, when's the last time you met somebody you were really horny for? I mean, do you know anybody who you find so attractive that just thinking about him makes you want to cream your jeans?" Without thinking about it, I blurted out the name of my history professor, and the two of us started laughing. The point of the story is that his graphic description of what it means to be totally excited about another person is probably as good a description of the feeling of passion or sexual desire as any. But I certainly don't always feel that kind of immediate desire. None of us do. Who can regularly feel that much intensity or excitement? So does that mean we should give up on sex? Of course not. We need to remember that there are many levels and layers of desire, all of which can be explored. we need to remember that sex is part of what makes life so much fun. Sometimes we need to learn to find ways to bring our desire and our passion to the forefront. Freud called it libido. When I was in graduate school, I took a seminar that I often remember. One of my fellow students was a cute guy, let's call him Leonard, who didn't know he was a cute guy. Leonard had a presentation that was sort of classic nerd. I don't remember if he had a pocket protector or if his glasses were really taped together, but you know the type of guy I mean. Leonard was assigned a project for our seminar. He was supposed to do a presentation on attraction and love. When the time came round for him to speak, he started this incredibly boring presentation. Finally, the professor said something like, "Okay, Leonard, that's enough. I can't take any more. Why don't we just start a discussion by going round the table and each of us try to give our own definition of love? How do you know when you're in love with somebody? Barbara, you start." I said, "It's somebody who really gets your juices flowing." Everyone but Leonard cracked up. In fact, Leonard said, "What does that mean?" Of course, everybody laughed even more. It was pretty good-natured laughter because our class was like a slightly dysfunctional family in which we all tolerated each other's foibles, but it immediately became clear to me that my definition of erotic love and sexual desire clearly relied heavily on a physiological component. Now, that's not true for everybody, and it may not be true for you or your partner. In fact, it may not be true for me anymore. No, I take that back. It's still true. Freud receives credit for making sex and desire something that Western civilization could talk about in classrooms as well as bedrooms. He wrote a fair amount about desire, as did Havelock Ellis, Richard von Krafft Ebing, Charles Darwin, and other important thinkers from the late 1800s and early 1900s. When Freud talked about desire, he called it libido. Some writers and psychologists still do, although others focus more on words like attraction and love. It's interesting to note that for the most part, Masters and Johnson ignored desire, although all previous theoretical writers had indicated that it was probably the most important variable in whether two people ended up having sex with each other. Remember that Masters and Johnson were scientists interested in being able to precisely measure and define aspects of sexuality. Ways of measuring desire were and are elusive. Masters and Johnson preferred to focus on verifiable data. In the 1970s, the well-known sex researcher and therapist Helen Singer Kaplan added a desire phase to Masters and Johnson's sexual response cycle of excitement, plateau, orgasm, and resolution. Kaplan's very important insight was that sexual behavior begins in the mind long before you get to the bedroom and any sexual activity actually starts. Other social psychologists of the time also started to study the relationship between sexual desire and romantic love. By the 1980s, the concept of desire had become more important. In fact, sex therapists began to see so many patients complaining about inhibited sexual desire that it appeared to be a virtual epidemic. This, even though nobody had yet been able to adequately describe or measure it. Measuring sexual desire continues to be a huge problem. Some researchers have tried to measure desire indirectly through the measurement of vaginal or penile blood flow. But these are inaccurate because they are actually measures of arousal, not desire. Nonetheless, some people make the assumption that if you become aroused, you must desire sex. This connection is not necessarily true. Sexual desire has also sometimes been confused with sexual satisfaction, which, when you think about it, is actually its conceptual opposite. Desire is unfulfilled anticipation. Satisfaction is when you get what you want. There are also two other questionnaire measures of sexual desire of which I'm aware. Both of these confuse sex drive and sexual desire. Sex drive, which is testosterone-based, is an internally induced body and mental state. Sexual desire is connected to an external object. It is fueled by wanting to have sex with a particular person. Since desire implies a distance or separation between the person and the valued object, another thing to keep in mind when we talk about sex is the element of longing. Sexual desire is a motivational force that is both intra-individual, located within the person, and interpersonal. Since desire is presumed to be directed at some qualities of the partner, measures of sexual desire typically fail to distinguish between desire for kinky sex and desire for interpersonal sex. Practitioners of sadomasochism, for example, consistently report higher levels of sexual desire than people who do not practice S&M. Other questions that purport to measure desire include, how much sexual desire do you think you have compared to other people of your same age and sex? And how long could you comfortably go without sex? The measures of sexual desire also confuse frequency and intensity of sexual desire. For example, a common question is, how frequently do you want to have sex? Or, how often do you think about sex or think about wanting sex? No one has really studied the various levels of desire intensity. The closest thing to the most intense levels of desire is probably that state of being temporarily obsessed with someone and thinking about having sex with that person 85 to 95% of your waking hours. Tell me about it. One of the newer theories about love and sexual desire belongs to Helen Fisher, a research professor in the Department of Anthropology at Rutgers University. She thinks that romantic or passionate love is a basic human drive and that reproduction is controlled by three different sets of hormones. Testosterone causes our sex drive and makes us want to have sex. Dopamine, a neurotransmitter in the brain, causes us to focus our desire for sex on a specific person. Two hormones secreted by the pituitary gland, oxytocin for women and vasopressin for men, stimulate a climate of attachment and intimacy, which help create a good environment for child rearing. In my view, sexual desire has six components. Number one, the physical. This is the testosterone-based drive that correlates with sexual appetite and plain old-fashioned lust. This physical drive is necessary, but in and of itself, it is not sufficient to explain the totality of sexual desire. Number two, fantasy. How old were you when you first started daydreaming and having sexual thoughts associated with feelings? We probably start thinking about sexual feelings before we even know what sex is. Number three, anticipation. Which comes first? Motivation or longing? Whichever, at least part of the fun of sex is derived from the energy and interest connected to the wish to have sex. Number four, love. Intense feelings of erotic and romantic passion associated with a specific person will inspire just about anybody to think about sex. Number five, attachment. Feelings of fondness and friendship can be an important part of what attracts us to a person. These feelings can grow and change shape. Number six, becoming proactive. Taking action and pursuing the object of your desire. Many people think that the path from hormonal urge to completion of the sexual act is a straight line that should be followed in order. It's not. The importance of the above list is that it shows that if you want to increase desire, you can start at any point and move in any direction. Change one aspect of it, and it will change the whole thing. Looking at sex in this fashion opens you up to seeing new possibilities and ways of increasing desire and sexual frequency. Don't ignore low desire. Since impaired desire is the number one presenting complaint of people visiting sex therapists, I think it's important that we all think about what that means. By now, I'm sure you have figured out that I am very sexually oriented. I like sex. I like thinking about it, and I like doing it. Nonetheless, there have been days, and sometimes even weeks, where sex is the last thing on my mind. Yes, even the sex therapist is sometimes a little low in the desire department. When that happens to me, I know that I don't want to continue feeling that way. From professional experience, I also know that people who feel as though they are temporarily turned off to sex can sometimes get into a bad rut of ignoring sex and pretending to themselves and others that they can live without it. This is a very unwise approach. For one thing, if you are in a relationship, it's terrible for intimacy. And if you are alone, avoiding sex is one way of making sure that you don't establish any kind of intimate relationships. So, the obvious question is what to do about it. The first thing to do if you are going through a bout of low desire is try to figure out what's causing it. Just knowing why can help you find a solution. There are many reasons why both men and women might be feeling less than sexually inspired, but there are also specific reasons for each sex. Here are some of the reasons why passion sometimes takes a back seat. Common reasons why women avoid sex. Feeling unattractive or fat. If a woman isn't feeling good about any part of her body, she might not be happy about showing it. I've known women who avoided sex because they had pimples on their backside or zits on their face. Concerns about excess poundage will also make many women avoid sex, or at least sex in well-lit rooms. Anxiety and fear. Many fears impact on a woman's sexuality. The most common revolve around a fear of pregnancy or a fear of sexual coercion or abuse. Hormonal issues. A woman's hormones wax and wane. Pregnancy, nursing, postpartum depression, menstrual cycle, menopause, and birth control pills all make a difference in how much or little desire a woman may feel. Many women say that their desire is greatly influenced by their menstrual cycle. Emotional history. Some women carry emotional issues stemming from childhood or earlier sexual relationships. Sometimes these issues show up immediately. Other times, even the woman herself may not be aware that something is disturbing her. Sometimes sex only becomes a problem in the context of a committed or deeply intimate relationship. Insecurity. Many women need a very secure environment in which to express their sexuality. They need to feel very comfortable and confident about the relationship they are in. They need to feel safe. They need to feel that their partners encourage as well as understand their deepest sexual desires. Some women repress their sexual passion if they are not feeling secure about the nature of the relationship. Something her partner is doing. I once met a woman who said that her spouse insisted on brushing her teeth before sex. It wasn't because he thought she had bad breath. It was because brushing her teeth turned him on. It sounded a little weird, but perfectly harmless to me. And I certainly try not to make judgments on what people find sexy. However, this woman found it a complete turnoff. Trust me, in bedrooms across America, men and women are turning each other off with similar sexual requests. For example, many women have told me that their boyfriends or husbands want them to talk about having sex with other people. They don't want them to do it, just talk about it. Some women enjoy this, but others find it unpleasant. They say it makes them hate sex. Many women say they hate it when their partners do anything that depersonalizes sex. Common reasons why men lose interest in sex. Hormones. Levels of the male hormone testosterone make a direct difference in how interested a man might be in sex. Emotional issues. Stress, anxiety, and depression all make a difference in how sexual a guy feels. A man who is having trouble in the workplace, for example, may also be having trouble in the bedroom. Performance concerns. Some men worry because they have difficulty getting and maintaining an erection that they feel good about. Men worry that they will have an orgasm too soon, or they may feel shy and unsure of their sexual abilities. These worries will take the fun out of sex and can set up a vicious cycle in which a man might begin to avoid sex. Something about his partner. Men can turn off sex because they have turned off on their primary partners. Perhaps she has gained too much weight, or she begins to smell exactly like the chocolate cake or tuna fish casserole she ate after dinner. And this is true every night. Perhaps she has habits that he can't stand. Perhaps she spends hours on the phone with her mother. And this is also true every night. These habits or behaviors can put a huge damper on a man's sexual desire. Common reasons why both men and women lose interest in sex. Health issues. Your health impacts on your sexuality. Something as simple as sleep deprivation will reduce your sexual drive. So will thyroid levels as well as other medical conditions. When you are in pain or don't feel well, sex as a concept can be a low priority. Conflict about the relationship. Are you confused about whether or not you want a specific relationship to continue? Both men and women cite this as a reason for avoiding sex. Relationship problems. Think about all the things that can threaten a relationship. Think about loss of trust and arguments about money and broken promises. Think about infidelity. Think about inappropriate jealousy and possessiveness. Think about anger. Do you feel like having sex with someone at whom you feel angry? Do you feel like having sex with someone with whom you just had a 20-minute argument over whether or not to turn on the air conditioning? Think about disrespect and the absence of affection and support. All of these things, and more, can put a major damper on any sexual feelings one might have. Boredom. You think it can never happen to you, but then it does. You love your partner, but even so, you have settled into a less than satisfying sexual rut. Sex is so dull that you both decide that it is easier and more fulfilling to masturbate. Fear of sexually transmitted diseases. These days, this is not an unusual fear, and with good reason. Both men and women worry about the various serious diseases that can be spread through sexual contact. You have a companionate relationship. What, you ask, is a companionate relationship? It's one in which the partners are close, intimate friends who love each other and want to stay together, but who have lost interest in sex. This may sound strange, but there are many relationships like this. I've had men and women tell me that they love their partners and that they are deeply affectionate with each other. They may even sleep spooned around each other. But sex has become a non-issue and a non-event. Often, one or both partners in such relationships make a distinction between sex and affection. A cold, disinterested, or inattentive partner. Some people complain that the primary thing wrong with their sex drive is a partner who is lacking in passion. He's a cold fish. I think she is frigid. These men and women say that their partners appear so disinterested that it hardly seems worth going through the motions to have sex. I once talked to a man who said his wife reached new heights of multitasking. He was doing oral sex on her when she reached over, casually, to the bedside table, picked up an emery board, and began working on a hangnail. Matching this story is a woman who said that her husband wanted her to do oral sex on the couch while he was watching Sunday night football and eating chips. It was his perfect fantasy come true. it became her nightmare. A controlling partner. Go here, do that, say this, say that, lift that leg, raise that hip, harder, softer, more pressure. Can't you ever do it right? Some men and women can't stop giving instructions and directions. They want what they want, when they want it, and how they want it. This isn't about passion or desire. It's about control. Almost inevitably, the partners of these control freaks turn off to sex. Limited opportunities for sex. Babies, small children, teenagers, another resident, relative, or guest, all of these can create obstacles to a joyous sex life. So can disparate work schedules and sleep patterns. A partner with different sexual needs. Greg wants sex 3 times a week. His girlfriend, Gwyneth, thinks 3 times a month is about right. Viola expected that when she got married, she'd be having sex every night, as well as on Sunday morning. Her husband's response? Is she out of her mind? Probably nothing has more effect on someone's desire than being with a partner whose sexual needs are totally out of sync with your own. Medical treatments, including prescription drugs. This is a major issue these days, with so many people on antidepressants or other medications that affect sexuality. Birth control pills can impact on sexuality, for example. So can high blood pressure medication and tranquilizers. Many of the drugs prescribed for depression, SSRIs, monoamine oxidase inhibitors, MAOIs, and tricyclics, are frequently implicated in conditions such as erectile dysfunction or orgasm impairment. That means that a man could first have trouble getting an erection, and once he does, he might have an equally difficult time having an orgasm. A wide variety of drugs can impact on your sexuality. I recently talked to a man who said that he had hurt his shoulder in a skiing accident, so he was taking a commonly prescribed pain medication. As far as he was concerned, the medication dulled a lot more than the pain. These issues with medication affect both men and women. Consulting the doctor. If you have lost interest in sex, or if you think your ability to have sex is impaired, the first thing on your agenda should be a visit to your doctor's office. Don't put off making an appointment. Get a complete physical and discuss your situation. Make sure you are seeing a doctor who takes your complaints seriously and does the necessary tests. Don't forget to ask him to check your hormone and thyroid levels. If your sexual issues are connected to a specific medication that has been prescribed, ask if there are similar medications available without these side effects. If you cannot switch your medication, an effective antidepressant, for example, ask your doctor if he has any other suggestions. If you're a man who is having difficulty getting or maintaining an erection, talk to a doctor about drugs, such as Viagra, Levitra, or Cialis. These will often compensate for difficulties caused by many prescription medications, including antidepressants. Something to keep in mind. If your doctor prescribes any new medication, ask him or her about the side effects, including those that are sexual. As ludicrous as it may seem, there are still some doctors who fail to inform their patients. If you can, search the internet and read all the small print. Drugs to improve erectile function. Scott, age 35, is one of millions of men who have experienced a serious depression. In Scott's case, his depression was at least in part connected to a very stressful and demanding job that he hated, but couldn't really afford to leave. Eventually, his despair over his work situation spilled over into his home life, making him moody and short-tempered. His wife begged him to see a psychiatrist, which Scott finally did. The psychiatrist prescribed an antidepressant, and within a couple of months, Scott was beginning to feel better, with one major complication. He couldn't get an erection. Before the medication, Scott was so depressed that he wasn't even thinking about sex. But as his depression lifted, Scott found himself in real conflict. He didn't want to give up the relief that he experienced from the antidepressant, but he also didn't want to live without sex. And he didn't think the situation was making his wife any too happy either. At 49, Rob thought he was too young to get prostate cancer, but he was wrong. Rob was very fortunate. The disease was caught early, and after treatment, he was assured that the likelihood of it returning was minimal. Although the treatment was a success, it left Rob with a disturbing problem. He couldn't get an erection. Thomas and his wife, both in their early 60s, had always had a highly charged and pleasurable sex life. He and his wife always thought that their sexual connection was one of the strongest ingredients in their marriage. Then, about a year ago, Thomas noticed that it was becoming more and more difficult to get and maintain an erection. He felt like having sex, but his penis wasn't cooperating. Even when his penis became erect, it wouldn't stay that way. A larger problem was that both he and his wife had become so discouraged over what was happening that they had stopped trying. Even the idea of sex was becoming frustrating and disturbing. Thomas was beginning to feel old, while his wife was becoming insecure and beginning to wonder if Thomas would have this problem with a younger woman. Scott, Rob, and Thomas are like millions of other men who go through bouts of erectile dysfunction. But unlike men a few years back, they are very fortunate because there is a possible remedy for this situation: prescription drugs that deal with erectile dysfunction. The first drug on the market was Viagra. Now, it has been joined by Cialis and Levitra, and there may be others in the pipeline. The primary difference among these three drugs is how long they remain effective after ingestion. Which drug you take is something for you to discuss with your doctor and your partner. The important thing to know is that there is something that you can do. There are many reasons for erectile dysfunction, ranging from anxiety and stress to diabetes and cardiovascular problems. The good news is that there is now an effective way to address so many cases of erectile dysfunction. One of the main controversies about erection drugs is whether you should take them if you technically don't need them. Will any of these drugs turn you into a super stud if your erection is already pretty good? Probably not. But some younger men who have taken erection drugs experimentally or recreationally have noticed that when they take these pills, their erection gets harder, and if they have sex once and want to do it again, that second erection comes with greater ease and speed. If there are no side effects and it doesn't hurt you, is there a downside to taking erection drugs when you don't need them? From my point of view, the answer to that question is yes. It is possible, for example, to develop such a psychological dependency on erection drugs that you become anxious at the thought of having sex without them. Another problem is that if you take a pill every time you have sex, even if you don't really need it, sooner or later you're going to have an episode where you think the drug isn't working as well. Either you don't get an erection, or the erection you get isn't as hard as it usually is. You may think to yourself, "Oh, this Viagra isn't working." What has probably happened is that you've gotten lazy and relied on the Viagra and lost touch with what you are feeling. Then you take a larger dose the next time, and pretty soon you're up to the maximum dose. I've seen this happen. The way to avoid it is to make sure that you aren't neglecting the intimate and sensual aspects of your sexual relationship, the activities that help you get aroused. Because the erection drugs can help you get a strong erection, perhaps more quickly. Some guys go straight for intercourse and neglect foreplay. Don't fall into this trap. Even if you are using an erection drug like Viagra, start with the lower dose and see if spending a little more time on arousal techniques doesn't give you the same results. The literature from the manufacturers of all three drugs reminds consumers that these drugs alone will not make you feel desire. However, many men report that they have received an enormous boost in confidence from knowing that their penis is getting a boost from the drug. With this reduced anxiety and newfound confidence, they say that they are able to be more in touch with their desire. The sex lives of many, many men and their partners has improved dramatically from drugs such as Viagra. I think this is a great thing. Remember, though, that even with the drugs, you have to feel like having sex in order for them to work. Ways to increase desire. Despite all the negative news about the epidemic of low sexual desire and all the things that cause low desire, there are many, many ways that have been reliably shown to increase sexual desire. Let's go through some of them. Improve your diet. If you feel overweight, try to lose a few of those extra pounds and see if that doesn't boost your libido as well as your sense of confidence. Cut down on sugar and fat. A healthy diet may be just the boost your sexual energy needs. Exercise regularly. Any form of physical exercise can and probably will increase your sexual desire because it increases dopamine, the brain chemical associated with feelings of passionate love. The best kinds of exercise to increase dopamine are vigorous forms like running, cycling, and swimming. I've found that yoga, Pilates, and floor aerobics work too, not just because they stimulate dopamine, but because the positions often result in unintentional stimulation of the genitals. I'm sure I'm not the only woman who has had an unexpected orgasm in aerobics class. In general, any kind of exercise with pelvic movements is good. Experiment more. Start doing things differently. New places and behavior can add sparks to your sexual relationship. Break your routine and plan a romantic weekend vacation with your sweetie. Even at home, look for some new and novel things to do together. Go dancing, visit amusement parks, or find a sport you can enjoy together. Hey, here's an idea. Watch racy movies and start fondling her in the dark during the exciting parts. Start thinking about sex while you are together at the beach, park, or supermarket. Learn to play with your partner and the idea of sex in a new way. When you are shopping for food, for example, buy a can of instant whipped cream and tell her that you're going to write your name across her body and lick it off. Do anything that gets your heart rate up in a sexy way. Improve your fantasy life. People with inhibited sexual desire, ISD, report that they fantasize less often than people who are sexually satisfied. There are other studies that show that frequency of fantasy is correlated with an increase in sexual drive. In fact, a lack of sexual fantasies is one of the two major criteria for ISD, also called hypoactive sexual desire disorder. Many researchers have attempted to measure frequency of sexual thoughts, daydreams, or fantasies. How they typically do this is to ask their subjects to wear a beeper that goes off at random times during the day. The subjects are instructed that every time their beeper goes off, they are to write down what they are thinking in a journal. Obviously, the researchers don't tell people that they are looking for sexual thoughts, or else every time the beeper goes off, everyone would automatically think about sex. One finding from studies using this technique is that men have many more sexual thoughts on a daily basis than women do. People fantasize for many reasons. Some fantasize for escapism. Others use fantasy to increase arousal during sexual activities. It's interesting to note that men and women typically don't fantasize because they are not getting enough sex. In fact, for women, it's the opposite. Women who report high sexual desire as well as a high level of sexual activity and orgasmic ability tend to fantasize more. It's also interesting to note that when androgens, male hormones, are administered, people report an increase in sexual fantasies. If you feel sluggish in the desire department, I think it's worth your while to put in some time on your fantasy life. Try using the beeper technique in reverse. Program a beeper or an alarm clock to go off at various intervals during the day. Whenever it happens, think about sex on purpose. Thinking about sex should make you want sex. Try it. See what happens. If you have no good working sexual fantasies, use reading material or photographs to get you started. Fantasize about an unusual or novel sexual encounter with your current partner. Picture her wearing clothing that you like. Imagine oral sex and exciting new positions. Don't go straight into the genital connection, but instead learn to fantasize the way a woman does. Fantasize an entire romantic encounter from start to finish, and do this without masturbating. To boost the novelty factor, think about sex with an attractive stranger you see during the day. If you are in a committed, monogamous relationship, you don't have to act on any of these fantasies, but you can use them to get you started. Watch just enough porn. What is just enough porn? Just enough porn is enough to get you excited, but not so much that you become addicted. My attitude about pornography is a bit conflicted. I can think of several ways that it can help you become more sexual. For example, watching porn will increase sexual desire, at least temporarily, boost the number of times you want to have sex, again, temporarily, teach you some new sexual behaviors and positions which you can incorporate in your own lovemaking, give you permission to show you how to be more sexual in your own life. I can also think of ways in which watching pornography may not help your love life. For example, pornography can desensitize you to the dozens of small, wonderful sexual intimacies that can happen between two people. You can reach the point where you view so much porn that you need more and more stimulation to turn you on. For example, unless there are two women with incredible bodies having sex with several incredibly over-endowed men while using dozens of interesting sex toys, it becomes boring and ho-hum. Watch too much porn and you may become dissatisfied with your own body as well as your partner's body. You can also become dissatisfied with what you and your partner do together because you compare it unfavorably with what is happening on screen. My bottom line feeling is that a little bit of pornography can stimulate your sexual desire, but too much of it, and it runs the risk of becoming an obsession. Know yourself and try to avoid going overboard. Let go of the idea that sex has to be spontaneous. Our culture values spontaneous sex. We want to believe that the best way to have sex is when desire sweeps over us and we can't stop ourselves. Dream on. I mean, how often does that really happen? In fact, planned sex contributes more to sexual desire than spontaneous sex does, because when you plan it, then you get to think about it and look forward to it, and that increases desire. Trust me, I've been having planned versus spontaneous sex for years, and this approach works. If you start to feel your desire burning out, lay off the sex for a few days and start fantasizing and planning when you will have it next. Have sex even when you don't feel like it. This may be the single best piece of advice I can give to anyone who complains of low sexual desire. Having sex can boost your sexual desire. As Rabelais said, the appetite grows with eating. I'm not talking about having sex if you find sex repellent. That's a whole other problem. I'm talking about normal circumstances where sex sounds like an okay idea, but you're just not super horny, and you're not sure if you'd rather have sex or raid the refrigerator. Many people think you should have desire before you have arousal, but often it's the other way around. Arousal can cause desire in much the same way that desire causes arousal. They have a reciprocal relationship. It's like eating. You get satisfied after you eat, but eating a lot of great food develops your palate, so you want more fine food. Exercising makes you want to exercise more. Drinking good wine makes you want to drink more good wine. It works for sex, too. I always encourage people with low desire not to retreat from sex, but instead to start being sensual. Start fooling around with each other's bodies in an intimate, non-threatening manner and see what happens. I will include some suggestions for sexual exercises that will stimulate passion. When we put off or avoid sex, we can sometimes allow our bodies to become turned off. I know that they can be turned on again, and that's what we need to work at. We can't always assume that our hormones and genitals don't need some help and encouragement. Desire has emotional as well as physical components. Like everything else, desire and passion need nourishment and care. The fact is that you don't need perfect or ideal conditions in order to get aroused and have sex. All you basically need is a bed and a couple of bodies. That's it. It's simple. The more sex you have, the more sex you will want, up to a point. Everybody's point is different. It's up to you to find yours.